How should Christians vote? What are the top 10 questions that every voter should consider before voting? Author and speaker Alex McFarland, who's been a guest on this program many times, has put together a Freedom and Faith Voter's Guide. And in fact, we'll link to that voter's guide. It encourages us to think about issues, not personalities. Alex McFarland says, quote, "We are blessed with the right to vote in this country, but so many people take it for granted. The church cannot sit idly by and allow the nation to fall into lawlessness and chaos. There are millions of believers currently horrified at the direction this nation is heading, yet they believe the lie that their voice doesn't matter and therefore they fail to vote." End quote. Dr. Alex McFarland joins us on Vocal Point once again. I'm Dr. Jerry Newcomb. Alex, it's great to have you back on. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Newcomb. I always love our conversations, and I just want to be on record saying how much respect I have for you as a scholar, an author, a journalist, and broadcaster. And I know you and your predecessor, D. James Kennedy, you guys have been at the forefront of informing and inspiring people for biblical worldview and the relationship between biblical worldview and our nation and our freedoms. You all have been faithful to that message for a long time, and I want to say what an honor it is to speak with you.
Thank you so much. So I've got a question for you. How is it that we're recording this in the year of our Lord, 2024? How is it that there are still some professing Christians who are not even registered to vote? And then among those who are registered, there are some that will just sit it out because, oh, I don't like the personalities involved in, or, oh, I don't think my vote counts. Oh, it's all rigged. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it's very unfortunate, in fact, tragic, when, you know, George Barna and I were recently on a show together, and George Barna, a very respected pollster and sociologist, you know, there are still in America of those who profess Christ and, you know, they love God and country, there are still enough that if Christians would register and vote not only biblical worldview, but constitutionalism, you know, the people that populate the churches on Sunday morning could influence, if not steer, any election in the country. So when we have not only God's truth, and I believe God's mandate for citizenship and the stewardship of the country, and we could vote and legally, lawfully, morally, we could be informed to get up and vote and influence others to do the same. It's a great tragedy that the stats vary, but in the last two presidential elections, only about one third of professed Christians were even registered to vote. And the number that actually get out and go to the polls and do vote presumably is less than that. So we're missing an opportunity to be the salt and light that the Lord Jesus called us to be.
So what you're really advocating, it's not a particular political philosophy, it's just more like moral philosophy, and part of the moral philosophy is we need to be salt as well as light, and part of being salt is at the very minimum voting.
Indeed. You know, obviously as a Christian, I believe the gospel, the death, burial, and the resurrection of Christ for the sins of the world. And I would love everybody to become a believer and be saved. But, you know, when we're talking about the Christian's role in the public square, that's not just, you know, the gospel, because, Jerry, I can almost hear it. People will say, oh, you know, but the First Amendment, the non-establishment clause prohibits, you know, the endorsement of one particular religion. It's funny, I'm finishing a book right now on natural law, or you can call it morality. You know, George Washington and Jefferson talked about self-evident truth. Aristotle would have called it first principles. But in Exodus 21 through 17 are the Ten Commandments. And that moral knowledge written on the heart of all people, it's called natural law. What is so unique about America utterly unique is that we were a nation intentionally founded on the moral law which God, our Creator, has written on every heart. Now, sadly, progressive law and case law, which basically says today's judicial decision is based on the most recent relevant court case, that is not the philosophy on which the Declaration, Preamble, Constitution, and 27-point Bill of Rights is based on. We were based on moral objectivity. And when we go to vote, and although I know probably many candidates, I've interviewed candidates, and they've never even heard of natural law or what Jefferson called in the Declaration self-evident truth. But this should inform how we vote, because, for instance, the issue of abortion. Well, whenever I debate at universities, they'll say, well, you pro-lifers, the non-establishment clause prohibits you from imposing your religion. Well, the idea that all people have the right to life, that's constitutional truth. And it's also natural law truth that, you know, unless it's self-defense or national defense, no human legitimately has the right to take another person's life. So when we go to the voting booth, first of all, for Christians, I would say, understand that you have an obligation to be an involved citizen. That is stewardship, 1 Corinthians 6:19 and 20, that we are not our own. And here in America, we are to exercise the right to vote. We have the right of political self-determination. We can be involved, and we are to vote and take this biblical worldview to the polling place. Here are the questions. You know, where does a person stand on life?
So when you say here are the questions, you're talking about the top 10 questions every voter should ask before voting. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, I mean, we've put out a first-time voter's guide, because we're, like, this summer we'll be in front of 1,200 high school and college students, some of whom are of voting age, going to be voting for the first time. And, you know, we encourage people, consider the candidate's experience. What is their track record? What about the Constitution? Is this person truly a constitutionalist, especially on issues such as immigration, voting, free speech, abortion, our relationship with Israel? Is this candidate in question a globalist? Would they subordinate the U.S. Constitution to the UN or to the World Health Organization? Or, like all good leaders, are they willing to defend the U.S. Constitution from threats within or without? And then, you know, their worldview. Do they have not only a moral natural law worldview, or do they have a specifically biblical Christian worldview? You know, what about patriotism? What about God and country? Freedom of expression, freedom of speech, religious liberty. And Dr. Newcomb, here is something that can certainly be a flashpoint. I was even at a Christian university in Mississippi a year ago, and oh my goodness, I had students and professors about ready to castigate me because I talked about American exceptionalism, the idea that we are different. There are some uniquenesses about America. And so there are a lot of Christians even that are sadly uninformed about what makes America different. And then family, where does the candidate stand on the family? What about faith and science? Does the candidate demonstrate critical thinking skills? You know, during COVID and the way that COVID was handled and the quarantines and the subordination of many of our constitutionally delineated freedoms were set aside in the name of science, quote unquote, which we're learning. Even some of the COVID's most vehement defenders admit now that that was not at all rooted in empirical, observable, repeatable science. And of course, we mentioned the issue of life. And, you know, as a corollary, there's not only the reverence for life, but childhood and the rights of parents, protecting children under age 18 from pornography, violence, gender reassignment coaching. And, you know, on and on we could go. Dr. Newcomb, pastors, in fact, I'm about to do a debate on Fox News with a pastor, and they'll say very piously, you know, well, you know, God called me to make disciples, not American citizens. Well, yes, but I want every Christian, every voting age Christian to think about this. You can do evangelism chained to the wall of a cell, but you can only do missions in a culture that is free, prosperous, and stable. And so we have a vested interest in exerting our moral, legal, and yes, biblical influence. You know, I think 1 Timothy 2:1-3, very famously, pray for kings, for those in authority, that we may live a peaceable life in all godliness. Really, commentators say that 1 Timothy 2, you know, admonition to pray for leaders, many have observed that this means that the church should desire, work for, pray for a culture most conducive for the spread of the gospel. And so we just cannot, in good conscience, as stewards of the culture, we cannot passively opt out and then just say, well, God is in control. Yes, God is in control, but we who know the Lord are his ambassadors, and we're called into the fray to, as Benjamin Franklin and George Washington and our founders would say, if we enjoy the fruits of freedom, we have to work and vote and even fight to tend the tree that bears the fruits.
All right. Wow. There's so much there. First of all, let me just say this. You mentioned that not only should we preach the gospel, but we need to make things conducive as much as possible. Like, for example, make it legal to preach the gospel. Dr. Kennedy, about 2 decades before he died, joined forces with Bill Bright, with James Dobson, Marlon Maddox, and Larry Burkett, and a couple others. And they founded the Alliance Defending Freedom for that very purpose, to make it so that it's legal to preach the gospel. And then another point, you mentioned American exceptionalism. I think of when I interviewed the late Dr. Donald Lutz, one of the great scholars on American constitutionalism, who said, by the way, much of it gets back to the biblical tradition of covenant and so forth. But he said that the constitutions around the world are, for the most part, patterned after the U.S. Constitution, which was uniquely, you know, framed in a sense of where the Bible's concept about covenant helped lead to that. So that's a very interesting point in reference to American exceptionalism. You also mentioned how a lot of times today they only focus on court decisions and not the Constitution itself. I've talked to many people who went to law school, and they said, yeah, they never taught us the Constitution itself. They only taught us what the court said about it. Okay, we have about 30 seconds to wrap up on Christians and voting. How should Christians vote? Can we make a difference? Alex McFarlane.
Well, yes, I would urge people, if I may, to go to my website, alexmcfarlane.com, and get the free download. We've worked quite extensively on this, 10 questions every voter should ask. We've got a number of resources. And of course, my book, 10 Issues That Divide Christians, I write extensively about what is American exceptionalism and how, regarding heaven and earth, it's not either or, but both and.
All right.
Our home is in heaven, but until we get there, as Augustine said, in the city of God, until we're there, we have an obligation to the city of man.
All right. Well, on that point, we'll end. Thank you so much, Alex McFarlane. Alex, always a pleasure. Appreciate it.
God bless you, my friend.
You too. Bye-bye now.